Hello, guys. Welcome to the Not the Top 20 podcast. My name's Ali Maxwell. Next to me, George Ellick. We are talking about the EFL and all who sails within her. George, before we get going, we've got something to talk about. We challenged our followers on Twitter, and those of you who do follow us on Twitter might remember this from last Monday. We challenge you to tweet us an EFL player that you think is nailed on to play in the top division, to reach the very top, play Champions League football, possibly England. We know so many of the current England squad have come from the EFL, have played in the EFL when they were younger. And it's the sort of game that really gets people excited. Everyone wants to predict the one who's going to reach the top, and you replied in your droves. But it was a bit of a cheeky one, wasn't it, George? Because we're kind of a bit of crowdsourcing, because we've been getting quite into Football Index over the last few weeks. And that was a way of us using your knowledge and our own to try and do a bit of football stocks and shares. So yeah. Talk us through it.
Well, I mean, we want to be careful here, not by cluttering you guys with commercials and the like, but we have partnered up with Football Index, which is a product that you and I both really like. And anyone who doesn't know who they are, despite their marketing that you see basically everywhere in football.
John Motson's involved.
Guillaume Balague as well. Have a quick look, either on your phone or online. It's, as Ali said, it's, you can basically buy and sell shares of footballers. And for me and you, this is basically tailor-made for us. And I think for fans of the EFL, it's also very, very interesting, because it means that when we are the people who are spotting these young talents, we can actually put our money where our mouth is when we say this guy is going to play in the Premier League. We can actually buy shares in him, which means that when he does play in the Premier League, not only can you show your mates and say, look, I told you so, but you can also pocket a pretty penny as well. And when you think that, you know, I think it was only three or four players from the England's World Cup squad in the summer had never played EFL football, that just shows you the potential that is in this league. And obviously, these guys are very cheap at the moment. So we took the players you sent us to Football Index and we said, can you get these guys put up there? They're now up there as well. So you've got a host of EFL players, including, you know, the best of League One's talent as well. So
yeah, we've got a couple of League Two players in there. I know that Reece Brown of Forest Green was put up. I know that, I know firsthand that James Justin is involved, because he's very much part of my portfolio, and a whole host of Championship talent. I mean, you were talking about those rising up to the Premier League, and in that sense, it is an investment. If we'd been doing this last year, George, imagine the money we could have made on Maddison, Harvey Barnes, players like that. So if you did tweet us with a young player, head to Football Index, see if that young player is on the market. Because as you say, due to their nature being players in the Football League, they're not currently very high price.
Yeah, and naturally the way that, read the T's and C's when you sign up, if you sign up, but there's a... their price goes up. So you want to buy them low, the price goes up, and then you can sell your dividends for a profit. That's the aim anyway. And we have you covered as ever.
Yes.
At Not the Top 20 Pod. We've, similar to the black type offer in the betting show, we have an offer for you here as well, where if you put in NTT20 when you sign up to Football Index, you get and you deposit £20, you get matched with a free £20. So if you just want to sign up and have a go, you deposit £20, then you'll get another £20 on top, with which you can purchase the players that you like. And also, it's worth pointing out, if there's any players out there, anyone listening, and you are convinced that they are stars for the future, just drop us a DM, drop us a tweet, and we'll speak to the guys there and get them priced up for you as well. So fingers crossed, this is something that we can continue to speak to you guys about in the future. We're careful not to bombard you with commercial stuff, but it's a product that we both really like. And I think it's something that together, hopefully, given that we're all shrewdies in the EFL and we know exactly who's going to make it big, hopefully it's something that we can all make a couple of quid from as well.
Yeah. Also, given how much it's grown over the last few years, I remember starting to play a few years ago when I was at university, and it's got so big now. I know that there are people who genuinely do this, Football Index traders, pretty much full time. So if there's any of you who are already traders, big Football Index traders, get in touch with us. Any hints and tips that you can share with our followers, we'll happily retweet. Any media or content that you do, we're happy to share as well. And yeah, any tips, because I know about football, but I don't know much about stocks and shares really. So it's a nice way of getting to learn that as well. As George mentioned, it's just if you want to sign up on footballindex.co.uk, The referral code is NTT20, and any deposit to start with of £20 or more, you'll get £20 to invest in whoever you want. My current portfolio, if you're interested, Adam Webster, Reece James, Sam Field, Saeed Benrahma, John McGinn, and the big one for me, James Justin. I'm going all in on Justin being a Premier League player within the next few years.
And it's worth pointing out, you get more points if the players are playing top-tier football. So, for example, I think Benrahma is an unbelievably good buy at the moment, because he's obviously very good at football, and it would be a big surprise to me if he's not playing top-tier football somewhere in Europe in the next kind of 18 months or so. But, you know, let's move on now. We don't want to bombard you, but that's something that we are interested in. And hopefully, if it's something that sounds up your street as well, the offer code will help you start your Football Index experience.
We're going to head straight into the Championship now for our football chat. We'll start at the top because it's getting to that stage of the season where it's very difficult, as much as we like to touch on everything. This is where the focus is. This is where the excitement is at the top and at the bottom as well. So at the top of the Championship, Norwich now out in front on their own. They got the win against Ipswich in the Old Farm Derby. Leeds drew with Middlesbrough. Sheffield United drew with Aston Villa. But if you're just looking at the results, you're not really getting the full story. George, the Old Farm Derby, Sunday lunchtime, you texted me after 2 minutes of this game when Norwich rather had gone 1-0 up through Onel Hernandez. You said this could be a bloodbath. In the end, it wasn't necessarily a bloodbath. 3-0 to Norwich, and that speaks to the fact that Ipswich did remain competitive. From an Ipswich side, this game, to me, an absolute microcosm summing up their season in a nutshell.
Well, especially with Freddie Sears now out for 9 months, which doesn't help.
But, horrible, horrible.
I mean, it was more of a bloodbath in the literal sense, in terms of the anger and the tempers that flared in this derby. If you had told me before the match that Ipswich would enjoy more possession than Norwich, that they would have more shots than Norwich, I'd have been pretty surprised.
That's crazy.
But I wouldn't have been surprised. I think the only way that could possibly have happened is due to the game state by Norwich going 1-0 up after 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have been at all surprised by the result. It's fitting that this will probably be the last Old Farm derby that we see in the league for a long while. That's unless, I mean, Norwich make a swift return or don't manage to get promoted, or if Ipswich manage to return up to the Championship pretty quickly, because I think we can all agree that they are destined for League One. So no surprise with the scoreline. I mean, Ipswich continue to be fairly desperate, you have to say.
A lot of possession, as you say. It didn't feel like quality possession at times, did it? The midfield players, I thought, played fine, played well, received the ball, kept the ball, moved the ball forward. But in the final third, just real lack of cohesion, a real lack of quality on the ball, of good movement off it, and of any sort of execution when it came to a final ball or even a shot. And that's, of course, the opposite of what you see from Norwich. So the golfing class was there. Of course, at the back, Ipswich, prone to individual errors. A real lack of pace we saw. I mean, Luke Chambers trying to get across to stop Pukki's shot. It was like he was running in slow motion. It kind of summed things up at both end for Ipswich. From a Norwich point of view, not their best performance. The fans certainly recognising that, but still an unbelievably happy day. Zimmerman was sensational at the back. He won man of the match. A true captain's performance and what he was doing, sort of, I guess, in terms of what was going on with all the angriness, with all the scuffles, was almost as important as anything else. Calming everyone down, making sure that Buendia, for example, who was getting clattered every time he got the ball, was not boiling over, because they need them for the coming game. So Buendia, I want to touch on, Georgia. There's an apology coming from me, actually.
Go on.
First, I'd say that his two assists for the Pukki goals went massively under the radar, I think. And you know, we love our great friends at Sky Sports, but and the commentary team as ever, sensational. But I felt like he could have got more credit for those two assists. The weight of pass for both of them, absolutely perfect. Of course, for the second, he had intercepted a pass as well, and that really created the opportunity for Pukki. You said on the Sky Sports Transfer Talk podcast a few weeks ago that Emi Buendia could play in the Premier League. No complaints from me there. But you said some people call him the Championship Messi. And I messaged you and I said, do you know what, George? We're not very clickbaity. And I feel like that's too much. And you went, well...
I think you said that you were quitting the pod or like you were disowning the me.
Yeah, that's my own exaggeration there. I would never quit the pod, of course. But I was a bit disappointed because I was like, I've never heard that. He's definitely not... You can't mention Messi and Buendia in the same sentence. But I completely... A complete volt fast for me. I've completely changed. He is the Championship Messi. I used to hate that nickname, and now you know. I'm calling him La Pulga now.
You're coining it.
I'm waiting for him to play in World Cups and Champions League finals. Sensational performance from him. I thought Trevor Chalobah played well in midfield for Ipswich. Our friend Connor Rowden, who's the youth football expert, who we've done podcasts with before, pointing out that, you know, it's easy to forget that Chalobah would say, and many others would too, that centre-back is his true position. So to perform so well on and off the ball in central midfield, I thought was a boon. What about Paul Lambert, George? There's now, stats would tell you, that Paul Lambert's record as Ipswich manager, worse than Paul Hurst's record as Ipswich manager. Now, I don't know whether you sort of think about that with a bit of a wry smile, given the perception of the two managers, or whether you think, you know, that's an unfair comparison to make. But I find it interesting. He obviously has done so much right in how he's dealt with the fans and tried to gather everyone round despite the inevitable promotion. And he did that from the start, bringing in old legends and asking their advice and making it all very public. Good PR, I would say, that perhaps
it was needed. Paul Hart.
Paul Hurst. maybe could be accused of being not as PR savvy as Paul Lambert. Well, what do you think of that?
I think that's right. I think everyone involved would probably, except for Paul Hurst, would probably point at Hurst having to take some of the blame for the continued bad form. I personally think that, and I know a lot of Ipswich fans will disagree with this, I reckon they'd be on more points if they'd persisted with Hurst. I think that it's easy to forget that the performances for the first six or seven games weren't actually that bad. They were unlucky not to pick up a couple of wins in those games before the slide began. Now there seems to be the idea that Ipswich have somewhat picked up their performances. I haven't really seen that. They're still going to struggle to score goals. I think Alan Judge I was doubtful about his qualities now after his injury problems. Coming in has been a positive. I think he was their best player yesterday. And gives them at least some attacking impetus. And now that Freddie Sears is gone, you have to really wonder where the goals are going to come from. So it's absolutely desperate. And I think that Paul Lambert's in a position now, which is quite handy, where he literally can't be that bad because it's been so poor all season. Mm. So long as he keeps the fans on side with what he says, I think what happens on the pitch isn't particularly important, and everyone's now gearing towards next season.
That's a good point. The way I framed the good PR question was almost sort of putting Lambert down, I suppose, and maybe trying to back up Paul Hurst a bit. But at the same time, it's a part of the role, isn't it? It's an important part of the role, because how the fans perceive you and how that can contribute to the atmosphere of the club or to its detriment if they go against you early makes a huge difference after a relegation, because there's one thing we know, that part the first obstacle when you're relegated is, are the players and management staff going to be essentially welcome here from now on? Are the fans blaming them for relegation? Well, it feels like at this stage, Paul Lambert won't take the blame and will be able to continue with his work heading into next season, which is great, which is a positive for the club.
But the big thing is next season. If they have players in their squad who, you know, still aren't necessarily performing. Nolan had another poor game on Sunday, and Ciala's on the bench, Jackson on the bench as well. So, but these are guys who've proven themselves in League One under a different manager, and you have to wonder, given Lambert's transfer policy in January. Is it going to be tearing it all up again and ignoring the fact that they have these young talents? Next season's going to be huge for Ipswich, a massive club who are going to be, as we've seen with Wigan, Blackburn, Sunderland, that's going to be one of those clubs in League One who come down and are a huge fish in a small pond, and it could easily, and it should easily galvanise the club. It should be a massive thing for them to say, like, right, this is rock bottom. We've been knocking on the door of relegation for 3 or 4 years now from the Championship. This is where we regroup. We get the fans back on side by winning football matches and scoring goals. But you have to. I personally don't necessarily see the structure in place at the moment, especially with the ownership issues, to see them do that.
Norwich are scoring goals. Norwich are winning matches. Norwich are top of the championship. They've lost just two games since the end of August in the league. In this championship, with what we perceive to be not that much between a lot of the teams, that is absolutely sensational, and they are rightfully at the top. A word for Daniel Farker. What a sensational job he continues to do. He is ably assisted, of course, by Stuart Webber, the director of football. We spoke about him, the sporting director, I should say, spoke about him on the podcast last Monday. Since then, I've watched a wonderful interview that Connor Southwell, a Norwich fan, did with Stuart Webber, which is well worth anyone's time. An hour and a half of a sporting director speaking with honesty, the sort of interview we look for in our NTT20 Meet series. Brilliantly done from Connor. And just a must watch, a must listen, I think, for any fan, let alone a Norwich fan. So get involved with that. Daniel Farker, as you can imagine, so proud of the lads. Middlesbrough Leeds.
Wasn't your best, that?
No, I bottled it. Middlesbrough Leeds 1-1. This was an interesting game. I watched this one, George. I thought that Middlesbrough were fantastic for the first 60, 65 minutes. And not just defensively, although they did frustrate Leeds, who had very little going forward for the majority of the game. But actually, they were set up in a way that allowed them to create chances pretty much whenever they won the ball, Middlesbrough. And John Obi Mikel, more often than not, was winning it. And Lewis Wing was part of everything good going forward. So I was really impressed for Borough, but just not for the full game. They have an incredible record of seeing out Leeds. So I'm certainly not going to tell Tony Pulis that this is the wrong thing to do. But that he does have the tendency to make defensive change after defensive change to the point where you'll have essentially five defenders, four midfielders, and then a Son Belonga up front. Now, generally this season, that has worked. They've seen out games when they've gone ahead. They're one of the best in the league at that. It didn't work against Leeds, whose fitness, whose drive under Bielsa kept them going and got their late winner. Not much else to add there. Sheffield United Aston Villa Friday night was an unbelievable game, wasn't it? I mean, just in terms of comebacks and considering what we'd seen in the first 80 minutes, where Sheffield United were irresistible, another reminder that this league is the greatest in the world.
Well, it's just a ridiculous game. I mean, Aston Villa are it's hard to really describe them. They're kind of the entertainers, definitely, of the league. If they're not scoring goals, that they're conceding them, but they seem to be able to kind of forward with real quality. They definitely didn't deserve this point at all. Dean Henderson has a lot to answer for. I mean, he's been fantastic for 18 months now for both Shrewsbury and Sheffield United. So he's allowed a couple of mistakes, but this was really, really poor at an important time for the club. I personally don't look at it too negatively.
You don't think conceding three in the last 10 in the manner that they did will have an impact going forward?
I think it's going to be a huge ask for the players and the manager to get them back up for it. I was really interested. I was waiting with bated breath to see how Chris Wilder was going to cope with this, because knowing him, they'd have got a bit of a roasting in the after the game. But he came out and said, credit to the players, we were fantastic. We came to a really difficult place to play, and we were, you know, really good to get 3-0 up, which is interesting, because I think that shows that he's got an idea of just what the team are doing and the potential about what they're about to achieve. And to go to Villa Park and get a point away from home is still a point on that road, a point that he probably would have taken before the game. So it's undeniably going to be hard to pick up the team after that. And Henderson, I'm sure, would have had been pretty upset after the game.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they outplayed a team, a very well-assembled team, a very expensively assembled team. And were complete value for their 3-0 win. I was surprised not to see them slightly go for the jugular at 1-0. I think the game was there for the taking, which sounds surprising given they then went 3-0 up. But they did sit back, and both goals did spring on the counter after a mesmerising first 25 minutes of football where they completely dominated Villa. It seemed bizarre not to continue in that vein. But, you know, I still think they've got a huge, huge part to play in this. And people who are saying they're now going to fall away after that, I think are going to be proved wrong.
Yeah, they've got Middlesbrough in midweek, back at home. I'm sort of inclined to agree with you in this psychological sense. I don't see this leading to them just suddenly playing nervously, let's say, against Borough in midweek. But that remains to be seen. They are generally a team that understands their system, that plays with confidence in the system, confidence on the ball, and I don't see that being massively shaken by the concession of those late goals. So despite the amazingness of it and the excitement in general, I think we're both feeling fairly positive about Sheffield United. For Villa, the issues are the same. Are really, really poor. Couldn't sort of get control of the game, couldn't keep control of the game. And, you know, if... Again, not to be rude, they showed great character and some ability to come back and capitalise on those mistakes from Sheffield United. But again, a bit like Sheffield United, Villa scoring three late goals doesn't, I don't think, make us think that they are now on course to sort of blast their way up to promotion. They've still got a few weeks until Jack Grealish comes back from injury, and then I think we will be watching with interest. But it could be too late by that point. I think what we can agree with is that Mile Jedinak, that might be the last we see of him in a Villa shirt. He got the start, a little surprising, at the base of the midfield, and the game passed him by completely. When Glenn Whelan coming on is considered sort of the move that changed the game and allowed you to get a bit more solidity, then you know that the starter has not done much of a job there. Let's not forget West Bromwich Albion. They went to Stoke and won 1-0. They're within 2 points of Sheffield United, who are third. They're within 5 points of Leeds. They've got a game in hand over them and in Norwich as well. George, how impressive is a 1-0 win at Stoke at the moment? How impressed are you with West Brom at the moment?
It's a difficult question.
Good.
I think at the moment, this Stoke team, except for the Leeds result, are really struggling. And so it's hard to therefore place much... It's still going to be a difficult place to go. They've still got a very good squad, but it's hard to really say that this is a result that changes my mind against West Brom. I still very much have them as the fourth team in the title race. Just having seen them play a fair bit this season, given they're on Sky most weeks, and just thinking that they remain just worse than they should be. That some of their parts, the football they play is fairly stale. We rarely see much creative spark from them, and I still believe that when push comes to shove, their manager just isn't of the same qualities as the managers that he's going up against.
That's interesting, because that's been one of the things I've seen from Baggies fans this weekend was, well, everyone's perception is that Darren Moore, against the top managers, tactically lacking. But, you know, it was, for some, a tactical masterclass on Saturday against Nathan Jones. Now, Jones hasn't had long with that Stoke team, of course, but it is interesting that when you look at West Brom's record against the top teams, it's actually pretty good. They've won away at Norwich, away at Sheffield United. They obviously beat Leeds at home and still have them to play away from home. So it's possible that perception might start to change. At the same time, I kind of see where you're coming from, because when we see a team with the quality that they have, and when you watch that team with your eyes, it doesn't quite stack up. I think we both agree that, and this is asking a lot, of course, this is high expectations, but we both think they could be better, right? So that's where I think the question marks over Darren Moore come from. But no denying that he's turned the team around after relegation, and as teams dealing with relegation go, they've done about as well as anyone else I can think of over the last few years, and they're in a very, very strong position at the moment. A lot of Stoke fans, or some Stoke fans, I should say, getting pretty tired of Nathan Jones already, it seems. We should say not the Stoke fans whose opinions we fancy. But it is interesting, isn't it, that I said this about Steve Bruce on EFL Matters the other day. Even when you come in to take over a side in January, February, with no expectations of promotion and no real threat of relegation, even though some would call that a free hit, it is still possible to turn the fans against you in those few months. I mean, I would point at Paul Heckingbottom at Leeds last year as an example. Even without any particular expectations, and with essentially a mid-table finish being likely, what you do in those times, it can still come back to bite you, which can seem a little harsh. I mean, we would, I'm sure, say to Stoke fans, just be patient.
Yeah, definitely be patient. I mean, the only concern at the moment, which is a valid one, is that the players, some of the players who he's taken on this job from, probably have no idea who he is, probably have a bit of an ego, and probably aren't really that keen on playing for him. But those players will not be at the club next season. They're the issue. You only have to have a look at what's going on at Luton to understand the impact that this guy can have. So
fallen out of favour there very quickly, hasn't he? That divorce has not gone well.
No.
Nathan and Nathan Jones and Luton Town, which is sad. But yeah, I mean, I actually thought Vokes showed how he could be quite good in this system on the weekend. He missed a few chances, but I thought it was clear to me that he will be a big part of this team next year under Jones, and he can be a very good part of this team. With James McLean up front with him, clearly not the one that, clearly not a role that suits him. So there's sort of square pegs in round holes at the moment. I was impressed with the right back, Tom Edwards. His delivery was excellent. You just have to sort of try desperately to just give a little bit of time. I know it's difficult when the atmosphere is bad, when you're tired of losing, when you're tired of poor performances from the same set of players. But any more managerial changes aren't going to make a difference. This is not Nathan Jones's fault. It's early days. Bristol City won their sixth game in a row, their fifth win to nil in that run. They went to Blackburn, who are so good at home, of course, and won 1-0. Webster, man of the match at the back. What a shock that is not. They march on, really, don't they? And a poor performance from Blackburn certainly contributed to this. I know that the fans, quite rightly, under Tony Mowbray, they kind of expect to win their home games against almost anyone. And it's one of those sort of sliding doors matches that you get at this stage of the season with so many teams bunched up in mid-table that a win would have put Blackburn a point behind Bristol City. But they lost. It's now a seven-point gap. And you have to say for Blackburn now, any sort of playoff hope very much over. For Bristol City, certainly still alive. We've spoken about them a lot in the next few weeks, and if this run continues, we will continue to do so. Their big rivals at the moment for sixth spot are Derby. I thought they got maybe the underrated win of the weekend, George, against Hull, partly because there's been concerns about Derby over the last few weeks and months about whether on balance of play and on the chances that they create and the chances that they give up, certainly the underlying performance data, not reflective of necessarily a playoff team. But Hull came to town, a very good Hull team who are in very good form. And after a great chance for Grosicki was missed early on, Derby just sort of shut this game down, didn't they? Some great finishes from Waghorn, filling in for Marriott, who's injured. The centre-backs Tomori and Keogh were excellent, and Tom Huddleston pulling strings from the base of midfield. Do you remember, cast your mind back to deadline day?
He's not at Udinese, is he?
We're in the middle of the Sky Sports New Studios, which is a name drop or whatever you call it. And someone's just gone, can you go on and talk about Tom Huddleston to Udinese? We thought it was a wind-up at the same time.
Yeah, it feels like that transfer rumour must have come and gone very, very quickly. Put out into the consciousness just to get people talking about deadline day. Of course, we're not suggesting that was the case at all. He would have been a fantastic deep-line midfielder in the slow-paced Serie A. But Derby very happy that he was playing for them on Saturday, and I think this is a really, really big result for Derby. With Bristol City picking up the points the way they're going, I had this Derby team as one on the slide. So to beat one of the form teams in the league and doing so with a degree of confidence and a degree of dominance is really, really important for Frank Lampard's Derby.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's kind of what I was touching on with this sort of underrated performance. It wasn't one that got a lot of the headlines this weekend, but I'm sure Derby fans who were at the game left feeling really positive about the next few weeks and certainly a playoff push very much still alive. QPR 3, Birmingham 4, another completely mad game. I just feel like this league gets better and better each year. Maybe it's because it's in our interest for that to be the case. But, I mean, this was ridiculous. Jay Adams scored a hat-trick in, like, 40 minutes. Birmingham were 4-0 up in the first half. And then Matt Smith, who is the human wrecking ball, pulls one back, 45-1. And that's just... I just love this bit of football. It's 4-1 at halftime. QPR fans, like, mostly furious. And yet, because of that goal just before halftime, they go in thinking, I mean, maybe.
Chance.
Maybe. And then it's 4-3 by the 80th minute. And at that point, you think, well, yeah, definitely. They win a pen and they miss the pen. Lee Camp, the hero. And I have certainly been critical of Lee Camp this year.
I think everyone who's ever seen him play football has been critical of Lee Camp.
So it's only fair to point out that he made something like 8 saves in this game, including a late penalty save to give the points to Birmingham. Absolutely sensational. What else did I like from this game? Matt Smith won 20 headers, 20 aerial battles. It was like trebuchet stuff, just launching it in. It was a wonderful game to watch, I must say. Now, one of the questions I wanted to ask you off the back of this, and someone tweeted us asking this, is Che Adams the best overall striker in the league? So we understand that he's not the top scorer at the moment, but overall striker in the league, what do you think?
Possibly. I mean, I think it's hard to look past Gael and Rodriguez, given what they've actually done in the game. And it's important to reiterate and repeat that Che Adams is very much currently going through a massive hot streak. Like, there's just no... he's very, very good. His potential is massive. But I'm afraid to say you do not turn into a very good striker into one of the best strikers in the country in a run of games. This run isn't going to continue. I had a tweet from a Birmingham fan during the game saying, you said his form was going to continue. He's just scored a hat-trick. Well, yeah, I mean, it's fantastic, but he's not going to turn into a goal-a-game striker like this. The goals he scores are unbelievably good, which is worth pointing out. He's definitely creating chances for himself, which is important, rather than just being the product of a good team.
So that plays into all-round striker, doesn't it?
Of course
he can create for himself.
Absolutely, but then I'd say that Gael is someone who goes into teams who don't necessarily create a great deal in the Championship and score a lot of goals. That Newcastle team, for example, wasn't one that necessarily created chance after chance, yet he was so prolific.
So Gael create and Sharp and Abraham sort of guys that create chances via their movement, but then there's an extra skill that Adams has, which I think they don't have in the same abundance, which is being able to create on the ball, off the dribble, as they would say in
basketball.
Totally
agree, but then I would have all the ones you've just mentioned. I'd have Abraham, Sharp and Gael by miles as better kind of poachers and finishers. Yeah. So he's a huge talent and a really exciting one as well, and it's great to see him flourish at the moment as he is. But just a little bit of, let's just remember, yeah, a little bit of calm. He's probably going to get a move to the Premier League. It'll be interesting to see how he does. He's a fantastic prospect, but he's going through them at the moment a bit of a career-defining streak, and let's not put too much pressure on him for that to continue. As he is, because inevitably that's going to drop off a little bit.
This is the most sensational top goal scorer battle, and we have to talk about it. We've mentioned it a few times, but it's got even better over the last few weeks. I mean, Billy Sharp is at the top with 22 goals. That's already more goals than last season's top scorer Vidra got. Vidra got 21, I think it was. There's still 15 games to go of the regular season. And it's not just that Sharp is the sort of standout goal scorer. Last year it was a bit rubbish, wasn't it? It was basically Vidra and Graben. Graben was scoring goals for Villa, previously for Sunderland, and he didn't feel like a great goal scorer. Now you've got Sharp on 22, Pukki on 20, Abraham on 20, Che Adams 19, Mopai, the early season top scorer, 17, Dwight Gale and Jay Rodriguez on 16 and 15, and Bowen and Graben as well on 15. And then you get to Roof on 14, McBurnie on 13. So many good goal scorers. Just to bring in our betting show sponsors, Black Tie. At the moment, Billy Sharp, the favourite, 13-8. Timu Pukki, 14-5. Tammy Abraham, 3-1. Che Adams, 13-2. We're already on Abraham, aren't we, from earlier in the season? I think I think we're allowed to say that. We spoke about it at the time.
Mm.
Are you still quite happy to be on Abraham, or would you rather be on, say, Pukki or Sharp at this stage?
It's really hard to say. I mean, I think Sharp is an interesting one, but I think he's a vulnerable favourite, not because he doesn't score goals, because he's a goal scorer extraordinaire, but purely because of the amount of strikers that Sheffield United have got, that if they're approaching areas and times in games where they're not making a breakthrough, he could easily be one to make way for the likes of Scott Hogan, David McGoldrick, all these players that they have on their bench at the moment. So at 13-8, I'd probably want to take him on. Tammy's one who's going to, is going to get minutes in a team that you know is going to score goals. So it'd be between him and Pukki for me. And with Pukki, he's got to be one of the players of the season in the Championship, but there's still just this nagging doubt in my head as to whether he's actually any good. So for that reason, I'd have to go for Tammy.
Nice. Okay, good stuff. A couple of other Championship winners that would just rustle through. Games that we've decided were not as important, and we apologise for that. Forest beat Brentford. This was a good game. Both teams, I think it's fair to say, had some good attacking moments. It could have been a 3-3 draw, a 2-2 draw, a pretty even. In the end, an impressive victory for Forest. They were helped by Some howlers. Howlers might be going a bit too far. Some mistakes from Dan Bentley. For me, just a real weak spot still in this Brentford side, just in terms of his pure goalkeeping skills. I know that he's excellent on the ball and his distribution is good. He's got an excellent throw on him, but too often for me, you watch a goal that Brentford concede and you think, why was Bentley there? Or could Bentley have done more there? So that was a shame for Brentford. They played some good stuff. They were missing Rico Henry, the left wing back. So Odabajo, right-footed, playing left wing back. You can see that that affects the way that they, you know, play those combinations out wide. It just affects the whole system. So great for Forrest. Lolly was excellent as ever, as you can expect. A bit of a makeshift defence. Milosevic coming in for his debut, played well. And great, I think, for us to see Ryan Yates get a start. He's one of those guys we've spoken about as a loanee at Notts County and then Scunthorpe in glowing terms. So fantastic to see him get a chance. And hopefully that'll be the first of many. A lot of people pointing out that he's the type of guy Roy Keane could really get his teeth into. Swansea beat Millwall just about. Jake Cooper could and probably should have equalised right at the end. George Byers and Matt Grimes, the key men for Swansea. And we can't not mention the Preston away days. I'm going to give up the pod and just go full-time Preston, I think. Just a full-time North Ender. Sensational. As the it just reminded me when I saw that Brown had scored as well away from home. We got a few tweets, which was very, very funny. It just reminded me of that that Alan Partridge clip that you see where he goes, "This is great banter." It really is. And it really is. But Jordan Story and Ben Davis marshalling things superbly. They missed a lot of chance in this game. So that probably wasn't as fun as some of the last few games. But get in touch, Preston fans. Are you enjoying this as much as I am? League One, George, not a vintage weekend of League One football, but a big game it was at the Kassam. And it was a 1-1 draw, which on the face of it seems a bit of an anticlimax to me. Talk me through that game.
Plenty
of different branches of discussion to go down here. Just talk me through the day.
It definitely didn't feel like an anticlimax when we scored, I'll tell you that much. It was a feeling of relief that I haven't really... It was weird. It was like a feeling of massive relief for like 45 seconds and then just the immense frustration just returned because it was just annoying it wasn't the winner. It was a bizarre game. I now know we've had many tweets in recent weeks from fans who've watched their teams get beaten or draw with Sunderland and tweet us saying we don't really understand what's just happened. It was pretty similar to that again. Oxford squandered three fantastic chances early on to take the lead. John McLaughlin was unquestionably the man of the match, pulling off one very good save from Jamie Mackey, although I still don't really understand how he managed to get so little power on a free header like that. But even so, it was a good save. Another good save from James Henry in the second half. And they scored, I think they had two shots all game. One was kind of a scuffed 30-yard from Aidan McGeady that was just picked up by Simon Eastwood. And the other was the goal, Jimmy Dunn heading in after beating John Messino in the air from a corner. The second half was just relentless one-way traffic from Oxford, creating chances pretty easily. James Henry missed a really good chance from about 8 yards out, a free header where he managed to kind of head it backwards by mistake. And it just felt like it was going to be one of those days. And I just sat there, I was thinking to myself, given what I've said about Sunderland this season, this was the worst possible thing that could happen. I'd rather they turned up and absolutely battered us, because this was exactly what I feared. It was a boring team playing terrible football. Not, it's just incredible how a team with that much quality in it, how the likes of...
Why is it boring?
It's route one. It's mindless. You know, the only outlet in the first half was McGeady, to his credit, stays unbelievably wide.
Yeah,
and it means the outball is just go long over McGeady's head, and he had the complete beating of Jamie Hansen, unsurprisingly. Mm. And so it was a surprise when they took him off after an hour. But this isn't, you know, I'm sure there'll be a couple of touchy Sunderland fans out there, but generally all the responses that they're, you know, the fans themselves aren't happy about it. I've texted a couple of people today just saying there have to be question marks over Jack Ross. Like, how can a manager with this amount of talent have a team who you know, they've scored a goal every game this season, fine, but just the style of football itself just doesn't play into the hands of the talent they have. Like, Max Power and Leadbitter should be a really, really strong ball-playing midfield two with Honeyman in front as well. Three really technically gifted players. They're completely bypassed. I mean, Leadbitter, his heat map would have been near basically as a centre-back. A couple of really good balls from him, a great corner from the goal and a couple of really nice spread balls out wide as well, just showing his qualities. I'm having seen what I saw from Sunderland, I'll be continue to get against them for the rest of the season. Oxford, again, I think if Oxford played Sunderland for the rest of the season, every game, I'm pretty sure we'd stay up comfortably. And I think we will if we continue to play as we did. I'm sure a lot of Sunderland fans out there, and probably a lot of fans of other teams, are thinking this is, you know, quite a salty reaction. But the fact is that if we're in 21st and they're in 4th and I'm salty, then that tells you what you need to know about the game. It's unbelievable that Sunderland are currently 4th in the league.
They're about to play Blackpool, Accrington and Gillingham at home in the space of 7 days. So it'll be really interesting to see, A, how they get on, obviously, and B, the atmosphere in the stadium, because it's very rare that you'd go, you know, 3 home games in a week. It's brilliant. It's great for fans. It's a good quirk of the schedule with some of their games being postponed and earlier on in the season, and all certainly games that they will be heavy favourites to win, or should be heavy favourites to win, based on league position, based on strength of squad. But yeah, peculiar. They've drawn 5 of their last 7 games 1-1. I think more than anything, their fans are just a bit bored of that scoreline. But it is interesting, isn't it? Because on the one side, we've had people say, because they've got something like 9 games in the next 33 days or something. So they're absolutely packed schedule for the next month. On the one hand, some people say it'll be great to build momentum. You know, that's not a word I like. On the other hand, you'd say tough in terms of squad rotation, tough for tiredness will set in.
They have a massive squad. You know, Chris Maguire not on the, in the squad on Saturday.
That's true.
Sterling, the loanee from Tottenham, not in the squad either over the weekend. So they have the squad to do it. And there's no denying the qualities there. Like there's, if they play as they did on Saturday, and they have done the last few weeks, there's not a chance they'll end up with 9 points from those 3 games. But given the squad and given what's at their disposal, the fans have absolutely every right to demand that they do. And this isn't about data. This isn't about any of that stuff. It's just watching this Sunderland team. Not only are the results currently not good enough, but the style of football is also just absolutely ridiculous. When you think that they should be stepping on the pitch every single game with a much better the technical ability of their players is higher than most other teams they're playing. You know, you're talking about Blackpool, Accrington, and who is the third?
Gillingham.
And Gillingham. I mean, they should go into all 3 of those games on the front foot, dominating possession, dominating chances created, dominating absolutely every facet, with the teams who are going there relying on counter-attacking football to try and get something out of it. And I can say with pretty much all confidence, that's just not going to happen. All those teams will get chances to score, and Sunderland won't create enough. And Will Grigg, for £4 million, he barely touched the ball on Saturday, and that's in no way his fault. It's just playing in a system that is not suited to having a player who comes alive in the box. He's going to be feeding off scraps. If things don't change, I'll be amazed if Grigg scores more than 5 goals this season in the league.
Enough Sunderland, enough Oxford. Let's talk about Barnsley and Luton, because they've pulled clear because Portsmouth drew, Sunderland drew, Charlton drew. All 1-1 draws, which means that now, I think it was 2 weeks ago today, I saw on the Quest Highlights show, they pointed out 2 weeks ago today, there was something like 5 or 6 points between first place and fifth place. There's now 13 points between them. And that speaks to the fact that while some of these teams have dropped off, some of these teams drawing too many games, Luton and Barnsley, quite the opposite. I've seen various different XG gatherers tweet, so we're not sure of the exact numbers really, and you never can be with so many different models out there, but Barnsley basically broke the XG season record for in their win at Gillingham. 4-1, sensational. Corley Woodrow and Kiefer Moore with 3 goals between them. They've scored 21 goals between them in the last 17 matches that they've both featured in, so you can see where their strengths lie. The best front two in the league, or so I thought, because looking at Luton, an absolute embarrassment of riches was proven again on the weekend by the fact that Cummings came off the bench and played very well and set up George Moncur, also joined in January and also not a starter necessarily, came on and secured the win. If you look at Luton's bench on a Saturday when the teams are announced, it does look stronger than any of their challengers. So they're looking very, very good for promotion. I think that's a very obvious thing to say, but it's worth saying. Luton are 6 points clear at the top of the league. They are 9 points ahead of Portsmouth. They are 11 points ahead of Sunderland, and they are 13 points ahead of Charlton now. Various games in hand amongst them, but you'd rather have the points, wouldn't you? We should say at this point, get well soon to Kiefer Moore. It was a really horrible looking injury that he suffered. Still waiting for an update. I know he's out of hospital as we record on Monday evening, but it was a really nasty injury. And it was a weird weekend across the EFL. I can't think of many weeks where there's been at least four games that got 10 minutes plus injury time the Wigan game with Fox's injury, Leeds obviously with that really scary moment with Jack Clark on the bench, who seems to be okay, which is great, Kiefer Moore's injury towards the end of the Gillingham Barnsley game, and in Newport as well they went plus 10, and that is worrying, a lot of head injuries, but hopefully everyone's okay. No one in the bottom 10, George, won in League One this weekend, so nothing gained, nothing lost really in the relegation scrap, I guess. A good thing from an Oxford point of view fans of other teams down there.
I think from everyone's point of view, it keeps it ridiculously open, which is fine. It means that no one's looking like they're on rampant form. We've seen the clubs go through mini revivals. The Scunthorpe train continues to roll and you think they're probably just about out of it. But Bristol Rovers failing to get another win. And Plymouth as well, it's a decent result for them, yeah. Maintaining their form in a really tough game as well. So
best bit of skill.
Great to see Graham Carey. I mean, not only the skill, but the goal. I mean, he's been probably the biggest disappointment this season in League One. Mm. The performance levels have just massively dipped from him. So to see him back with a trademark set piece and pulling out a piece of skill that I didn't know people his age even had heard of, it was really nice to see.
I think I can pretty confidently say that if either of us tried that, there'd be somehow one of us would break a bone trying to do that skill, break an ankle or something like that. Absolutely sensational. You can see it on our Twitter account at NTT20pod. We shared it on Saturday night. Elsewhere in League One, good win for Doncaster against Peterborough. Peterborough down to 10 men in the first half for the second week in a row, really undermining their sort of start under their new start under Darren Ferguson. And they just seem to be a bit of an angry club at the moment, an angry team. The owner can be a bit angry. Darren Ferguson, a bit tetchy before and after the game. And through all of it, Grant McCann, graceful, swan-like, taking Donny into the playoffs in the place of Peterborough, and we'd expect that's where Doncaster will stay. We've spoken about them so much this season, but just so impressive throughout the park. And Fleetwood are my team to watch, and they got a very good away win at Bradford on the weekend. Fleetwood, they're just, if you look at Fleetwood's starting 11, I've said it before, if you look at their starting 11, there's so much quality there, and there's so much. It's a mixture of young talent and real experience and recognisable EFL names. And they look like they're really starting to come into some form. You could say the same, of course, about Scunthorpe, who are somehow all the way up in 14th now, which is sensational. And other good wins for Coventry, Burton and Blackpool. League Two is getting more and more exciting every week, George. I know this is your sort of... Well, I was going to say your naughty pleasure, but given we do a podcast about the EFL, you probably can't call one of the three leagues.
I think this is where most people just switch off, so it's like, which is a shame. Stay!
Absolutely not.
Stay.
Well, tell us why it's getting more exciting every week, George. I mean, you had Notts County, the bottom club, winning at fourth place, Forest Green. At the top of the table, Lincoln drew, Mansfield lost, Bury won. And Colchester went from seventh to fourth with a win.
Well, that's, I think Colchester's a story now. I mean, every time I say that we now know who the elite are, then someone rears their head. And I suppose Colchester, given that, I mean, I was sitting here the other day being like, me and you thought they were one of the best teams in the league. And you said, no, he didn't. And now here we are again being like, well, actually, maybe they are. It's really tough to, I mean, I was very surprised to see Mansfield get beat on the weekend, I must say. I was also surprised. I mean, Lincoln's red card was a massive blow to them, because I'm sure they'd have gone on to get that win against Northampton had that not happened.
Should have had a penalty at the end. I really hate even mentioning referees. I don't think there's much value in us discussing refereeing decisions, but that was a particularly bad one, and we did get tweeted about five times by Lincoln fans. So yes, we recognise it, Lincoln fans. You should have had a penalty. You'd be mad not to recognise that. I'm sure they balance themselves out over the course of the season.
But the really, the biggest result for me, I guess, of the weekend was in League Two was the Forest Green Notts County score. Huge result for both ends of the table. Forest Green losing at home is a rarity. Just when they're getting themselves in position for an automatic promotion push, was a big shock. And Notts County, you know, have now taken points, 3 points off Forest Green. They've taken a point off Lincoln. And the team that we all, you know, the crisis club that we spoke about after what happened with the owner, the team who couldn't buy a point for love nor money, are suddenly kind of getting themselves back into touching distance of the rest of the league. And if Neil Ardley can pull this off, then it's going to, you know, be a massive feather in his cap. And suddenly I think that they are, you have to put them back in the mix.
Yeah, we've had a lot of people saying, can they do it? Can they do it? And it's only 4 points.
Yeah, I think
and
they
there's
can.
15 games to go.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no denying. I mean, they're right in it. And given the quality they have at their disposal, there's no reason why they can't get there pretty quickly.
The fans, in a sense, should feel quite lucky that their team was able to make the enforcements that they did in January. And I wonder if they would have made the same enforcements if they were, let's say, 21st or 22nd, if it was slightly less desperate. Because, of course, the teams who are 21st and 22nd, and this is another real boon for County fans at the moment, the form of Yeovil, the form of Morecambe, even with a 4, 5, 6 points gap, you'd be so confident looking at those teams.
Yeah.
If you're Notts County now, looking at the individual quality of Baldwin's winning goal, giving the defender the shoulder, dipping inside and curling it into the top corner, exactly what we thought he was going to do consistently, and he hasn't got going all season, and he did pick up an injury mid-season, but that's the quality that he has. Michael Doyle in midfield, probably the most under-the-radar signing of the last few days of the transfer window. The ability that he has, quite aside, I mean, most people talk about his character and his experience. And of course, he's been part of two promotion teams from League Two in the last few years with Portsmouth and with Coventry. But the quality that he has on the ball as well, I mean, the guy's an absolute pass master. That's what we thought David Vaughan would be, but it looks like Doyle's the one now. O'Brien, massive on the weekend. There are huge positives. Now, it doesn't mean that they will stay up. But to put together two performances like that against Lincoln, against Forest Green, shows that they're certainly not going anywhere. Paul Scholes has been announced as the Oldham manager. Now, quite aside from the question of his involvement with Salford City and any conflict of interest there, the EFL decided that it was not a conflict of interest. I don't think there's too much to argue about at the moment, as the two teams are not in the same division. Something that we'll keep an eye on, of course. But generally, how excited are you for Paul Scholes to be Oldham manager? Because I was saying to my mate earlier, we don't care about big names, and we obviously don't care at all about the Premier League with our not the top 20 hats on. But it's very cool to have Frank Lampard, Sol Campbell, and Paul Scholes joining Sol in League Two.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on.
I think he's going to be good.
I think he'll be good as well. I mean, it's obviously a job that he wants. He's going to inspire the players. Sol Campbell has shown that we shouldn't turn our nose up to these guys. It's just a bizarre... I feel like me and you should spend the summer speaking to all these legends and kind of creating an NTT 26 aside team with Frank and Sol and Scholesy. But I mean, who's next?
Well, quite. No, it's a good
question. Thing, I mean, this has been rumoured for ever since his first retirement. So it's amazing that it's finally come off.
I'm pretty sure, because we became mates when we were like 9, 10, 11, whatever it was. And we were massive football nerds.
We were.
Yeah, we were. Obviously now we're just pure legends. But I remember that was around the age I remember telling everyone that listened, did you know that Paul Scholes is going to finish his career with a season at Oldham? He's promised Oldham because that's his team. That's the team he supports. And of course, that never happened. I mean, the bloke would have been injured within about 3 games. So that never happened. So it's nice to see that, although I wasn't quite right, we now see him take the dugout. There's a great piece written by Gab Sutton today on thesackrace.com about the first sort of few points of importance for Scholes in order to achieve with this Oldham side. Let's not forget, it's a side that's done very well in the cup competitions this year, struggled massively for consistency in the league, find themselves in 14th place, 8, 9 points off the playoffs, and you have to say it'd be an unlikely playoff appearance at this stage, but with plenty of quality. And they showed that on the weekend, beating Crawley 3-0 away from home. Crawley, very good home side normally. But with Callum Lang and Maouche in midfield, Nepomuceno with a fantastic goal, Bronger with a fantastic goal. We spoke about their slightly unusual recruitment. And on their day, a lot of these players can sparkle at this level. And the jewel at the back in George Edmondson, someone that we like a lot as well. So fascinating to see how Scholes does. He's got his first game in midweek at home to Yeovil. Yeovil under in all sorts of bother. They lost at home to Grimsby this weekend. Grimsby have now won 3 in a row. They won 4 in a row, then they lost 4 in a row. Now they've won 3 in a row. So you can bank on them winning their next game. And after that, who knows? Tranmere beat Stevenage. That very much keeps Tranmere's playoff dreams alive. I know their fans have been a bit disappointed with, again, inconsistency, not being able to put together a winning run. But that puts them just 2 points behind Tranmere, 6 points off the playoffs. Norwood back in the goals. He reached 20. It was an unbelievable number for someone who's played so little EFL football in his career. And you mentioned Colchester, brilliant performances in the last 2 weekends. Courtney Senior's assist for the third goal shouldn't be allowed in League Two, that sort of skill, that sort of pace. It won't be long before he finds his way back towards the second tier, for example, where he came from, a former Brentford youth team player. And we wanted to talk about Swindon as well, just to finish off. Before we do, Newport, what a week for them. Cup heroics on Tuesday, beating Borough. Then, despite presumably tired legs, or so we thought, beating Mansfield. As I said on Twitter, Newport winning a tight game with a cleverly worked set piece. We have seen that before, and huge credit to Mike Flynn. But also credit to Richie Wellens, because Swindon went to MK Dons and they won.
Yeah.
And you're getting a bit annoyed at how good Swindon are.
I'm not getting annoyed. I mean, whilst they're in League Two, I really couldn't care about them.
Oh, nice.
But it's a huge game for them coming up against Forest Green on Tuesday night, because if they can win that one, then they're really the form. I mean, it's amazing.
Swindon make the playoffs?
I managed to choose the one game in that Crawley game, the one game under Richie Wellens where they didn't turn up for the betting show. Yeah. But of course they can.
8 points.
I think everyone, it feels this season, I don't know why, it feels like everyone is almost talking in terms of like the season coming to an end now.
Yeah.
We're like a long way away from the end.
15 games.
There is loads still to happen.
Two-thirds gone.
Ideas that a team who are currently, how many points are they off?
8.
Yeah, 8 points off with 15 games to go. Absolutely they can do it. Mm. They win tomorrow night, they're 5 points off.
Yeah.
They've got their game in hand, and they'll be taking points off a team who are currently in one of the playoff positions. So, yes, they can. I hope they don't. Big game coming up and a huge result for them on the weekend.
Playing some really nice stuff, Richie Wellens.
Lovely goal from Keshi Anderson.
Yeah, well, this is where we are different. You liked the 25-yard banger. I liked Michael Doughty.
You love Michael Doughty.
Who passes. That's what he does. He's a pass master.
That was a lovely, nice.
he genuinely scored with a pass from the edge of the box. Absolutely beautiful. And then a Panenka penalty. Really nice touch as well to put the icing on the cake. Doughty, definitely my favourite player in League Two at the moment, in terms of his cheekiness, in terms of what he can do with the ball. He just looks a cut above. So really good stuff for Swindon. MK Dons, still scratching our heads really about this. It's really difficult to put your finger on it. Certainly from my point of view, I think George, you'll agree. We wouldn't just sit here and say, here is why MK Dons are on poor form and here is what Paul Tisdale needs to do to turn it around. It's very, very difficult to say, so we're not going to.
Exactly.
But we hope you've enjoyed this podcast. It's an exciting week because we have a betting show on Thursday, of course, and we had our best ever week on the betting show. So hopefully some of you who listened to that last week would have liked what you heard and maybe made a bit of money off the back of that. Certainly a very welcome good week, both of us in the green. I won 5 out of my 6 picks and George won 4 out of his 6. So you can hear the updated rankings on Thursday and our picks ahead of the weekend as well. But also on Friday, I'm going to interview the next guest for NTT20 Meets. And I think over the next month or so, we could be looking at a fair few NTT20 Meets, maybe 2, maybe 3, maybe 4 at a stretch. So it'd be a good month for the pod. Thank you guys for your continued support of the podcast. We are very grateful for it. We love it. And yeah, we're going to keep cracking on. So keep joining us. Keep tweeting us at NTT20Pod. Follow us on Instagram as well. And until Thursday, that's it from us.